This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
It's going to be an interesting thing going forward. I don't know if you're asking me if I'm going to take a hometown discount or not. I don't know what that even looks like. So it's going to be an interesting summer. I couldn't even begin to tell you where, you know, things are going to start and where things are going to end.
That is Andrew Kopp back in May at the end of the Jets season.
I've never heard that clip before.
I've only played it a couple times over the last number of months.
We played that clip last week.
Yeah, and I played it probably 2 weeks before that and 2 weeks before that because it was relevant. He was going to be deciding how his future was going to play out with the Winnipeg Jets, and we now know how it played out. It played out with a two-year arbitrator-decided contract extension. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday, the 27th of July. It's a special show. We're going to take your calls in hour number two, starting at 10:15 in the morning. It will be open phones here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We don't do it often, but it is our final show before we break for a few weeks in the summer. So we'll want to hear from you in hour number two, starting at 10:15. You'll be able to give us a shout at 204-780-1290. Get in on the conversation. That coming up in the second hour. Of course, today's IC Twitter and text question of the day is: the Winnipeg Jets will return to upper echelon status in the NHL if X occurs. Tell us what X is. You can do so by sending us your comments at Illegal Curve on Twitter, or send us your text messages, 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We welcome you to the program. We start with Andrew Kopp. You heard him off the top there about...
I thought we were going to start with the fringe play that you went to last night.
Well, I went to a fringe play and I quite enjoyed it, thank you. Maybe you could use a little bit of culture in your life.
Well, you know, I went to the fringe, I think that was 2 years ago, when our boy Benji Rothman had the play.
Right.
And he was hilarious. He's always funny.
The fringe is always a
good time. I haven't gone in a couple years. I mean, I have a daughter now. It's tough to get out with the babysitting and all that.
I have two children. I am not sure if you're aware of that or not.
Yeah, but you've got Sheldon / dad.
Well, I have
a great babysitter.
I do have a good support system in place. That's true. I saw Dave Minuk out in Old Market Square last night. It was a great day for Winnipeg last night. We were heading home around 11 o'clock. People were still flocking in. The party was just getting started.
The Cube is always a good time, and I'm not a big I don't really attend a lot of the plays. Sometimes I do, but more often than not, you just go down to Old Market Square and you hang out, and it's just nice to see people out. It was a beautiful night. Really not, there weren't any bugs downtown, and it was just nice, and the weather was good, and there was music playing, and again, you just get this sense of Winnipeggers kind of mingling, and it's funny because you can't help but think to yourself, who are all these people? Because you never see them, a lot. And then everybody kind of went down there, and it was a lot of fun.
It was a good congregation of Winnipeg last night. Winnipeg at its best, no doubt, at the Fringe Festival. If you're out and about, highly recommended.
There's only two more tonight and tomorrow, I think, of last night.
That's correct.
Drew, are you a fringer? Do you go to multiple plays, or do you like to just maybe go to one or two a year?
I wouldn't describe myself as a frequent fringer. I just don't, unfortunately, have the time to do so, but I went to the one play this year. I'm not sure. I'm pretty booked up for the rest of today and tomorrow. Not sure I'll get back to another one, but if the opportunity avails itself of it, I will certainly hit it up again.
And you'll remember last year, I went to the hockey one.
Right.
And then we had an interview with the guys after the net, because I went on the Friday night.
Yes.
And then we had them on our show to conclude.
My understanding is immediately after that interview concluded.
Oh, they ended their...
They ended their theater company altogether.
Yeah,
they just went their separate ways at that point in time.
We just can never... That was the pinnacle of our careers.
We've
been on Illegal Curve Hockey. We're officially done.
That's right. Anyways, let's get started talking about hockey, and we're all over the Winnipeg Jets. It is our final show before we break for about 4 weeks. We'll be back on the Labor Day long weekend, so you can stay tuned for that. But Andrew Kopp gets a two-year contract awarded by the arbitrator. It's 2 years. It's $2.28 million per season. It's certainly a raise on the contract that he played under. But if I'm Andrew Kopp, he's going to be an RFA at the conclusion of the contract. I know there was a lot of confusion about that. Was this going to take him straight into unrestricted free agency?
That's because he played the one game.
The one game. People thought that burned a year on his entry-level deal. It didn't. He's still going to be an RFA for the Jets. Will maintain his rights, if they so choose, for one more season at the conclusion of this contract. But if I'm Andrew Kopp, I have to think that I'm not especially happy with this arbitrator, not the arbitrator's decision, but the whole process. If you're Andrew Copp and you're reading the reports that you're going to get an increased opportunity potentially this year, you might be playing a second line center role for the Winnipeg Jets. There's talk about giving him an opportunity up there, playing with in a more of a skill based role than necessarily the checking role he's been.
Yeah,
he's
more been, power play time, like you mentioned. Maybe yeah. He's the second line center. I don't know how likely that is to happen. I mean, I mentioned this last week, Drew. I know you want to continue here, but I think there's a possibility that happens, but I wouldn't exactly pencil him in right there because I think you still have the option of Brian Little there, even though we know that,
of course,
you know,
you have lots of options, but it seems like the Jets are willing to consider it more now than they have been previously in his stint here in
increased
Winnipeg.
Role, more offensive opportunities.
So if
right?
you're Andrew Copp and you're going to see a scenario where there's potentially more offensive opportunities and as a result, theoretically, increased numbers, you probably aren't that thrilled about having to play not so much this year for $2.28 million, but next year for $2.28 million.
Yeah, and I know where you're going here, Drew, but, you know, it's possible that you have left a little bit of money on the table, and we know that, you know, when you go into arbitration, you go with the high number. I think it was 2.9, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was on a one-year deal.
Yep. Correct.
Right? So even on a two-year deal, you probably could maybe get up to 2.5, maybe 2.7, something like that.
But once you file for player-elected salary arbitration, you sure. have to know the Jets are going to choose a two-year contract.
Yep.
It's just, I mean, the Jets would be foolish not to.
Well, you would always rather have a two-year deal in this situation.
If you're the Jets.
Right. It just doesn't make any sense. Yeah, if you're the player, then you could have a Kevin LeBanc situation, sorry. But when you're talking about Copp, I agree. But if you want to look at it maybe in a different way, he has the opportunity to make himself a lot of money if he's able to put up a 20-goal, 45-point season, 40-point season. And guys, we've talked about this a lot. I mean, we don't have to go back over, you know, what we think about Andrew Copp. I think we've all agreed, and really most hockey observers agree, that Copp is a fantastic player. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be considered, you know, upper echelon or anything like that, but he is a guy that we just talked about. He can play on your second line, third line, fourth line, center, wing, penalty kill. He's a really good underrated penalty killer, I think. Good faceoffs and all that. We went over that last week, but I think the point is, for him, he has the ability to make himself a lot more money. And sure, maybe you would like to be making more money already, but you go from $1 million a year mm-hmm. to 2.3, 2.28. So you're now making, you know, decent money. Should you be making as much as a guy like Adam Lowry? Maybe. What's he at? 2.9?
Yeah,
I could hear that argument, but the reality is he is going to make more money on his next contract, right? Think of Brandon Tanev. I mean, Brandon Tanev is what's his AAV? 3.5?
Yeah, crazy number.
Yeah, so I think Andrew Copp on his next contract could be around 3.5. I don't think he's ever going to be a $5 million guy. But he can definitely be a $3 to $4 million guy. So in that sense, yeah. And going back to what you said, I don't know if any player or a team, for that matter, any team really wants to go through the arbitration process. I mean, the Jets want to get him for a little bit less. We know how cognizant of that salary cap the Jets are. I mean, if they can get him for 2.28 as opposed to 2.6, they're going to use that money. And we've talked about this before. It's not just for Lion A. And for Connor, I mean, you possibly are going to have to move out a player, and then you might need a little bit of money even to bring in a depth defenseman, right? So,
right. But if you're Copp's agent, if you're Kurt Overhart right here in this situation, mm-hmm. I have to, and I mean, I know that, you know, you go to salary arbitration, you think you're going to win. You think that your number is going to be the number, or is going to be close, the final number is going to be closer to your number than it is the bottom number.
As opposed to the arbitrator sitting there going, waiting 48 hours and then saying, you know what, I'm going to split the baby down the middle.
Well, which is basically what they did.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're if I'm Andrew Copp, I would have to say to my agent right now, I'm not sure that you've given me the best advice, or you've done the best for me in this scenario.
Well, I think to your point, Drew, I think you're sitting there going, what? Because we saw the quote from Ken Wiebe and Mike McIntyre from Overhart saying
before the hearing.
Once they had submitted their filings,
yes,
48 hours in advance of the hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was on Friday. They said to Kenny and Mike, or he said to Kenny and Mike separately, obviously, that they're looking forward to the hearing process. Now, of course, we don't know what kind of negotiations are happening and transpiring between then and the hearing, or even after the hearing, between the Jets and Overhart. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, to your point, I think that is where it becomes incumbent on him to really be ramping it up, because you're right. If I'm Overhart and I know that the Jets may be putting my client into a position where he's going to get this opportunity – I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, then I really do only want a one-year deal because I would rather have Andrew Kopp signing a bigger ticket deal, make the kid an extra, you know, 750 grand on his next deal than not. Now, the only thing conversely is there is no guarantee that Kopp is going to get that role.
Of course.
I mean, Kopp could get defensive role, but we know that the stats that are allowed into these arbitration hearings are limited.
Yes.
They're not the advanced stats. So really, you're pulling back on some of the things. So the reality is, you know, if a lot of it could be in theory be points based, then if Kopp doesn't have a tremendously successful offensive year because he's not put in that role, that I'm just saying, just taking the devil's advocate position.
No, I understand. I think
that would be the only thing I would say that would counter that argument. But at the same time, I can understand your position because if I'm Kopp, you know, I'm only 25 years old. I'm betting on myself to have an increased role. Look, you had more goals than you did ever before last year, in 13 less games.
Mm-hmm.
So you know that there's a likelihood he was going to minimum break 30 points. Could have touched. I mean, he would probably not have 40 last year, but like again, like as he's
he would have been close though.
Yeah, he would have probably been close to 40. And the fact of the matter is that he most likely, again, knowing what's going to happen next year, have that increased role.
I think this is a scenario where as soon as Kopp and Overhart and filed for player-elected salary arbitration, the leverage immediately flipped to the Jets.
Well, and again, getting him for 2 years and knowing he's still going to be an RFA at the end of the contract.
Yeah, the Jets are saying 2 years, $2.28 million for you. Yeah, we'll take that.
Yeah,
Even leverage. Right? I know what you're saying, but it's more so you know that it's going to be split down the middle. How many times has the arbitrator split the difference, right?
Once they filed for salary arbitration, the Jets would say, "Well, we have no real interest. We have no real reason to want to negotiate a 1 year deal with you. Right. Why would we do that?"
What I would be curious to know is
why would the Jets do that?
Right, and I would be curious to know how close Andrew Kopp and Kurt Overhart were to signing a 3 or 4 year deal with the Jets, because it doesn't seem like they were close.
I suspect they weren't at all, because again, Kopp wants to bet on himself,
right? Mm-hmm.
And the opportunity seems like it's going to increase, but by filing for player-elected salary arbitration, the Jets get to determine the length of the contract. Of course, they chose 2 years, and there goes their leverage. The Jets don't have any interest in paying more than they're going to need to, just for the sake of getting you for a third year at this point in time.
And you know, to your point, and maybe what's proving your point is the fact that Overhart was overly confident in those quotes. I mean, if you think about it, his position is we really want to win the arbitration, right? Meaning, you know, and obviously everybody wants to. Actually, Stephen Bartlett, who's an agent, I actually read a really good piece he wrote in one of the law journals about the negotiating process in arbitration, but talking about leverage and that idea. And so perhaps Overhart realizing, you know, what we'll call a gaffe based on what you're saying, had to be a little bit overly confident in that sense to go and really try and, because knowing he needs to, quote, get a win for his client.
And he didn't get a win because the arbitrator did what the arbitrator usually does, which is split the baby right in half. And, so maybe it's a little bit closer to 2.9, but minuscule so. Mm-hmm. But
Andrew, with my wife 37 weeks pregnant, can we maybe not use that term?
Splitting the baby in half?
Yeah.
Okay. Splitting the Ezzy in half.
No, 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 no. Let's use a Seinfeldian.
Okay.
Split the bicycle.
Split the bicycle down the middle. There you go. Okay,
just,
fine.
You know,
fine. Yes.
That image, I don't like
you.
That.
Your point, yes.
Splitting the bicycle. Ezzy's saying is very literally.
Very literally, exactly. We're not actually splitting babies here and in the studio, Ezzy. But, I mean, if you're Andrew Kopp, I would have to think, if you play it out in your mind similar to how we just did on air, I would have to say, I'd have a hard conversation with my agent and say, how is this the best? How is this good for me?
And I would say,
where did I win here?
And I would, if I was Overhart, I would go back and say, listen, Andrew, if you wouldn't have said, I'm taking a hometown discount.
Oh, you know, that doesn't matter for anything
and
at
Dave,
all.
And Dave, even though I agree with Drew, I still don't know how much more anybody could have squeezed out of the Jets, because hold on, we know that Kurt Overhart, he's a squeezer.
But wouldn't you rather have
an aggressive agent?
Wouldn't you rather have a 1 year $2.1 million deal Andrew Kopp
than a
2 year $2.28 million?
And I agree, and that's why the Jets, they have the leverage there, like you talked about, to go 2 years.
Yeah.
Right? Because when the player
they
files
the leverage over to the Jets as soon as they filed for arbitration.
Exactly, but I guess to play devil's advocate, I would say that I don't know how much more they could have squeezed out, not only on a 2 year deal, but a 1 year deal, because of the way you're right. You would like 2.1, 2.2 on a 1 year deal.
Way better.
But I think that when you're talking about 2.2 million, you're just maybe a little bit like, I think Andrew Kopp, it's safe to say, is a $2.5 to $3 million player. right? And so maybe on a 4-year deal, you get maybe a little bit more, like 3.2, 3, whatever it is. All I'm saying is, even though, you know, the arbitration process is a little bit ugly, I don't necessarily know that this means that Andrew Kopp's long-term future as a Jet is over, because he still loves playing here.
Well, we don't,
and I still think you can work out a long-term deal in 2 years.
Let me ask you this quickly before we have to head to break, Dave. Mm-hmm. 2 straight years that Kevin Cheveldayoff and Kurt Overhart have gone through the salary arbitration process.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that there's personal animus getting involved at this point?
No, I don't think so. I really don't. I think that Overhart is known for what he is. Like I said last week, he's like the Scott Boris of the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
He's an aggressive agent for his clients, and he's an advocate, and that's what agents do. I mean, and he's fighting for what he thinks his client is entitled to. So, I mean, you know, I don't think you can allow that stuff. I mean, do they like each other? Do they go for beers after? Probably not. But like, I don't know that you're going to sit there and say. I mean, the reality is, Drew, I don't know the answer. I couldn't say that there's – it would be conjecture on my part to suggest one or the other.
We know that they have a history. I mean, we don't know if they – I don't think they have a personal relationship. Maybe they do. But when you're talking about their professional relationship, they have a long history there, right?
Yeah.
And even though I'm with Dave, I don't know this. I have no, you know, intel on the situation. I don't think that they would consider each other their favorites. I mean, I imagine Kurt Overhart isn't like – you know, Chevy's my favorite GM based on what they've gone through with Andrew Kopp, but more so with Jacob Trouba. But, I mean, the reality is, guys, it's a business, right?
That's
I mean,
right.
This was described in Jeremy Rutherford's article, and we've got Jeremy coming up later in the show, but it was described as, like, this is litigation,
mm-hmm.
right? This is law. This is business. Mm-hmm. So I don't think you can really let your kind of personal relationships or the way you feel about someone really get into it, right? It's just that's the way hockey's a big business.
Yeah,
you're talking about millions here.
And the truth is, actually, if you allow yourself to get emotionally invested, that really is going to lose a lot of your ability to negotiate with kind of a rational mind. So I really think you just got to maintain that focus and just be like, okay, be dispassionate and just allow the process to work through.
Well, the process worked. Andrew Kopp, 2 years with the Winnipeg Jets, $2.28 million per season. When we come back, we'll talk about Neil Pionk's contract extension. Our illegal curve question of the day was the Winnipeg Jets will return to upper echelon status if X happens. Getting some comments in via text message. One texter says, put Blake Wheeler as the number 2 center, or at the very least, separate him and Mark Scheifele. Another texter, Jaron in Thunder Bay, says, Jets need a quality second-line center. Andrew Kopp could be a stopgap solution. What options do the Jets have? So keep your comments coming via text. Send your text at 1290. Standard messaging rates do apply. And we'll read some of the Twitter comments as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the goal we had in mind, but... you know, it was our right to file and have that option, but we certainly didn't want to go through that. We wanted to get off on the right start with the Jets.
That's Jets defenseman Neil Pionk. He signed a 2-year contract extension. That was what, Dave, last Sunday? Is that when I was doing the work for you on LegalCurve.com?
That is true.
Okay, then last Sunday he signed...
Sunday at 6 o'clock.
There you go. Signed a 2-year contract extension for worth $3 million per season. As you no doubt know, Pionk, of course, was acquired by the Jets and that first-round pick in the Jacob Trouba trade. Let's talk about the Pionk contract signing. This segment is brought to you, though, by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. And of course, a reminder, coming up 10:15 hour, we're going to take calls, open phones in the last hour of the program, 204-780-1290. You can reach us in the interim in studio at Illegal Curve and via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. So when the Pionk contract came out, and of course they avoided salary arbitration by agreeing to the contract, I was a little surprised at the AAV. I thought that $3 million per season for a guy who, you know, admittedly himself said that he had a down year, his numbers weren't anything to write home about. To your point, though, earlier, Dave, about advanced metrics not being allowed into a salary arbitration hearing.
Some are? Yes.
Okay. A limited number, though.
I can't tell you which ones are, but I know that I believe basic advanced stats are.
Okay.
So you're talking about, I believe,
Corsi
4, things like that. I don't know if you're able to get into war and you're able to
get into
zone entries and stuff like that. But I do know that some advanced stats are. But, I mean, that is a good point, because when you're talking about Neil Pionk, a lot of people have pointed out that his advanced stats really indicate that he's a third-pairing guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you can necessarily take that small sample size and say that he's a third-pairing defenseman, because I think that he does have the ability to play in the top four. And I'm not saying that he's going to be a fantastic top four defenseman. He's only had one really full NHL mm-hmm. season, because his first year, you remember, he played less than 30 games. I think he played 28 games, if I'm not mistaken. So when you're talking about Neil Pionk, I think you're basing a lot of that on one season, right? Mm-hmm. So I think you have to be cautionary there.
But my point is, I thought that the $3 million per season was for AAV for the next 2 years was higher than I would expect it to come in this situation.
Yeah, and defensemen, as you know, Drew, a lot of it has to do with points and playing time. And mm-hmm. Neil Pionk, you can say whatever you want about his advanced stats. He had 26 points, and he was playing on the top pair with Mark Stahl. So, I mean, a lot of what he makes is going to be based on that 1 year playing, 20 plus minutes a game and putting up 26 points. I mean, that's the reality.
Uh-huh.
So I agree. Is Neil Pionk really a $3 million a year defenseman? Maybe he's more like a $2 million guy. But I don't think you or anybody expected Neil Pionk to get a $1.5 million contract. I think everybody was kind of expecting it to be somewhere around 2 to 3. Is that fair?
Yeah, I would agree. It would be somewhere in that vicinity. I was surprised. I think that, that they agreed so quickly at a $3 million a year deal. And I wonder if part of that had to do with incentive of this is your shiny new piece that you've acquired for a guy like Jacob Trouba. They don't want there to be any hint of discord. Not that there would be discord necessarily, but that there's almost extra incentive to get this done, get him happy, get him on the roster quickly, rather than squeeze $200,000 this way or $200,000 that way, Dave.
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, again, to your point, or to Ezzy's point, that there was only a year to really base what his value is. I mean, he's an undrafted, player, and we see that those guys like Brandon Tanev went on and got a 6-year deal as an undrafted player. So undrafted players doesn't necessarily mean anything. But the fact is, he had a year under his belt with a pretty poor Rangers team. The numbers weren't great, so I don't know that he had a tremendous amount of bargaining position. But, to your point, Drew, about the idea that the Jets want some harmony and want that idea of having a guy who's under contract, I guess the only thing you have to factor in, and I would imagine Kevin Cheveldayoff, Larry Simmons, and that crew did, was just factoring in where that money that they're allocating, that allotment is putting them in terms of the salary cap, and is it preventing them from doing something? And so, if we're talking, a $200,000 squeeze here or there, maybe you allow it to go to your point, Drew, to allow things to move forward, and that way you're not really still, not being able to sign Laine Connor and anybody else.
What I think is more interesting is what Pionk's role is going to be on this team, because mm-hmm. I realize, Drew, maybe he gets a little bit more money, but in reality, you're talking about a guy that's kind of making average money in the NHL, right? Like $3 million is close to the average salary, right? So when we're talking about Laine and Connor and Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele, obviously who's on one of the best contracts, you could argue Scheif should be making $10 million a year, right? So I agree, but for me, what's a lot more interesting is where is he going to slot in, right? And Mike McIntyre and Jason Bell had an article up on the Free Press. I think it just went up a few hours ago, talking about the different line combinations, because I mean, your guess is as good as mine, guys, because I think it makes a lot of sense for Morrissey and Buff to be your top pair, right? You lose Trouba, Buff is elevated, but you wonder, because of the flexibility you have to separate Morrissey and Buff,
mm-hmm.
you wonder, and we've talked about this as well, is it going to be Sammy Niku and Buff on your second pair? And then maybe Neil Pionk is on your top pair, and I realize, a lot of Jets fans get a little bit, they get a little bit scared, quite frankly, when you're talking about a guy with his advanced stats being your top pairing defenseman, but what are the alternatives, guys? I mean, Tyler Myers is gone. Trouba's gone. Sherratt's gone. I mean, are you going to put Tucker Pullman up on your top pair? I'd have no problem with that, but we just don't know, right? So that's what I think is really fascinating.
The Jets' defense is the great unknown entering.
It's a huge question mark. Like, to me, Sammy Niku could easily play in your top four. You have to insulate him, Dave.
Yeah.
And I definitely would not put him on your top pair, but we know even though he prefers to be on the right side, you wonder, because Niku and Buff did play a little bit together, you wonder, with that, you talk about puck-moving ability, Niku and Buff, I mean, I realize that, Niku's not the biggest guy, But you wonder if Paul Maurice is looking at that depth chart and he's saying, okay, I'm not sure where I'm going to put Pionk in, but if you've got Neil Pionk as your third pairing guy with Dmitry Kulikov, you know, I think you can make an argument that that's probably what you want your third pair to be.
Yeah, and I think it's a function of Paul Maurice adjusting the way he sees this team and quite frankly, the way he trusts his team. And I know his default is generally to use veterans and mm-hmm. veteran players, but the reality is I actually think that's being removed from his, you know, that from his tool shed. He really doesn't have that luxury anymore.
Yep.
Christian Vesalainen, Mason Appleton, Jack Roslovic, Andrew Kopp, all these guys are getting elevated roles.
Yep.
And I'm not saying some of them obviously been playing in the league for a while, but the reality being that a lot of these younger players, Sammy Niku, Tucker Poolman, they're all going to have roles on this team because it necessitates it based on the way the cap is this year. So I think from that perspective, I mean, look, this is a huge summer for a lot of these players. It really is. And it sounds like an obvious statement, but like Sammy Niku, I mean, obviously I've watched a lot of him play in the American Hockey League, and his ability is phenomenal. But you know, the problem that we saw was that Sammy Niku didn't get that level of experience, right? And I said that, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, but the one thing that I think is incumbent on Paul Maurice is really not to wait till the end of the year to start trusting these guys.
Has to start in October.
Yep. Absolutely, because the whole point is, first of all, you have that's when you have that leeway,
mm-hmm.
and it gives them, these young players, this opportunity to get their feet wet, get them invested in the league, and really will allow them to be big role players come April and May and June, you're hoping.
By the way, guys, this just came in. David Rittich signed a two-year deal, 5.25 with the Flames.
So there you go. A little over $2.6 million for Rittich and Cam Talbot. They're going
to... Big save, Dave.
Yeah, they're going to be the...
Sorry, 5.5.
5.5.
Yeah, so he's going to make, around...
2.75 right. or so per season.
Yeah.
So him and Cam Talbot are going to be the Flames' goaltending tandem as the Flames look to... well, they won the Pacific, but then they obviously flamed out in the first round, pardon the pun, of the playoffs. We asked you the illegal curve question of the day. What's it going to take for the Jets to return to the upper echelon in the NHL? Comments coming in via Twitter. Plungerhead, our good friend, says that Lauren Brossoit plays 35 games in the regular season. This will allow Hellebuck to shine through the playoffs. Danny says Connor Hellebuck will need to have a bounce back season. And Matthew says the Jets young star wingers need to learn how to play a 200-foot game. Keep your comments coming at Illegal Curve on Twitter, 129090 via text message. And remember, 10:15 this morning, open phones to wrap up the program. When we come back, Murat Atesh from theathletic.com is going to join us, talk more about the Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We welcome you back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. We're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend from theathletic.com. He covers the Winnipeg Jets. Murat Atesh joins us now. Murat, good morning. Happy summer to you. How are you?
Good morning. Happy summer to you as well. I have spent much of it hearing nice things about you guys. I visited family in Montreal, talked to some of the Athletic Montreal writers here, Les Perreault from the Globe, and I just keep hearing nice things about Illegal Curve. So thank you for having me.
Well, that's very nice of you to report that. You be sure to mention.
I'm
to
blushing
all the,
right now.
Be sure to mention to all these people that they shouldn't meet us because immediately their perception would change if they met us in person. We're much better from a long arm's length away between Montreal and Winnipeg here. Murat, obviously, we brought you on to talk about the Jets. You know, it was a busy week worth of news for the Jets. You have the Neil Pionk contract extension, avoiding arbitration. You have Andrew Kopp getting the two-year award from the arbitrator. We were talking about it sort of off the top of the show. If I'm Andrew Kopp, and I want your opinion on this one, if I'm Andrew Kopp right now and I'm hearing that I might be in line for an elevated role, and you've talked about it in some of your great pieces on The Athletic, how happy are you that you're now locked in at the $2.28 million mark for the next two seasons?
Well, I think the interesting thing to me about that number is it's probably within the range of what most of us would have expected before arbitration. So for me, I don't know if everybody else works like this, but the amount of work and the grind that would have went into that session, and we got the arbitration awards so late in the day, which implies that the arbitration session itself went to that point in, on Sunday afternoon. I wonder if it's a little bit less satisfying after going through that sort of session to get to that number, even if in and of itself that his new contract figure being a major raise and him having the opportunity to step up into the lineup is probably, you know, once he calms down from this arbitration situation, if he needs to, I think then he'll probably get to the point where it's more satisfying.
Rod, I wanted to ask you about your article about Neil Pionk. It was a great piece. You had a Q&A, and you know, there were some nice touches in there, you know, talking about, you know, Neil Pionk's got four siblings, and you know, they had the hockey rink in the backyard growing up. They also had the baseball diamond in the picture. It almost kind of looks like a little bit like Field of Dreams, I thought. But you know, one of the most interesting questions I thought you asked, and then also Pionk's answer, was talking about the amount of video that he likes to watch. And I thought that that was, you know, a real good insight in maybe the type of person, because as you know, a lot of people, folks here in Winnipeg, don't really know a lot about Neil Pionk. So I guess in the course of writing this article and this QA, what stood out to you maybe that was giving us a little bit more insight into the type of person that he is and the type of player that Jets fans can expect to see?
Yeah, you know, Neil Pionk was a really articulate interview. He was definitely thoughtful and willing to engage on the positive, the negative. He was willing to explore and own up to things that didn't always go perfectly for him in New York. I thought that he was candid and willing to explore those things, and that's why that was the most important part of the interview for me. So when he says something like, "Yes, I'm proud that they gave me so much up of the season, that's all I asked for as a player. Here's why I think my minutes were cut back. Here's why I think it was good for me. And you know what? Honestly, I don't think I was playing my best hockey. I just think that conveyed an accountable human being. And that's probably going to be something that the Winnipeg Jets fans appreciate. And then your quote about video as well is perfect. He says he loves it. You think it's the best teaching tool. He likes the challenge of translating it to on-ice situations. And even in those on-ice situations, he accepts that hockey's a fluid game. And while he's always looking to make the best possible choice, there's no guarantee that the best possible choice will always be identical to what happened before. I just thought it was really insightful the way he called hockey a fluid game as opposed to other sports, and he's played a lot of them.
You know, Murat, we had Sean Tierney on a couple weeks back, and obviously everybody loves his work online, and I asked him about that concept of splitting up Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele, and you know, we've seen Jets fans, and I know I see you interacting with them about projecting the lineup for next season and creating more of a balance. How likely is that, do you think? And I know you had an article on The Athletic recently about that idea of projecting the opening lineup, but how likely do you see Paul Maurice getting away from what he's used in the past and really breaking things up for next season?
I was asked this on our Q&A at The Athletic just yesterday, and if I had to go on one side of the coin or another and just pick what I think is going to happen, I would still expect Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele to be together on opening night. I think that's a partnership that the players enjoy, that Paul Maurice believes in, and we've seen some success from them for sure. I think that there are sort of analytical reasons, or if you start going to those deployment, or just the fact that we really haven't seen it and there's so much potential. We have a history of Blake Wheeler and Brian Little playing well together. Mark Scheifele can play together with just about anyone. He's at that point of his career. I think there's a lot to be gained from having new looks at it. And I think that part of the challenge for the Winnipeg Jets coaching staff this summer will be coming up with new looks and new variety, whether it's splitting Wheeler and Scheifele or otherwise. To sort of re-energize this team to what it was maybe in the first half of last season or even the season before that, which is a challenge with so many defensemen missing and roster being a little bit different than it was. That's a long way, winded way of saying I think it's a combination they like a lot and will go back to early, and maybe we'll see it, a little bit more creativity. I think it's a great idea to sort of start looking at new combinations in Winnipeg.
Murat Ateş is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Murat covers the Winnipeg Jets for theathletic.com. Murat, I'm going to ask you to put on your prognostication hat. 36 hours from now, is Dmitry Kulikov still a member of the Winnipeg Jets?
Yeah, I think so. I think the most likely situation in which Dmitry Kulikov would have been bought out in the second window, would be if Ben Sherratt had signed close to that $3 million mark, where the buyout for Kulikov would essentially cover off his salary for this year. You'd have the coverage on left defense, et cetera. But I don't think that the organization has soured so much on Kulikov as a player that they would buy him out just for the sake of it, especially with the depth chart that they have. Veteran player, I think they're going to keep him, and I think that we'll see him as a Winnipeg Jet this season.
To that extent, Marat, do you think then when Connor and Laine get signed, they're going to need to make a supplemental move to fit them under the cap?
I think that's entirely possible. It depends the degree to which, you know, long-term or bridge it gets involved and what the numbers are. I think most folks agree that the Jets have about $15 million to spend in cap space to get those two covered off. I think that we're in a holding pattern right now for the Jets until they get those two signed. And then you look at what the consequences are. Worst case scenario, is there a bridge deal? Is there a huge contract that they need a release valve for? Are there two long-term contracts? Is there a bridge in there that can fit under that 15, et cetera? And I think it's sort of, all of those logic paths are known to Kevin Cheveldayoff and the Jets, and depending on what they end up with and what they're able to do with these guys, then you look at safety valves. And then you look, okay, is there a Matthew Perreault for a pick or prospect sort of scenario type of a trade, or is there something else that they can do? And I think Winnipeg's in a good position where it's a move or a tweak away from cap compliance, even in the worst case scenario of a really quite expensive contract for those guys.
Rod, I think you'd agree that you'd make the argument that, you know, the Jets have taken a bit of a step back this summer. Maybe not a huge step back, but a little step back. And that has a lot to do with the fact that you lose your top pairing defenseman in Jacob Trouba. But, and Mark Scheifele was just asked about this recently. When you talk about expectations for this team, you know, you look at, you know, this time of year, the dog days of summer, you know, going into August and September, you know, you see the projections. Sean Tierney had the Jets projected, I think it was 92 points. But when you're talking about, you know, this Jets team and where they're at, because we know that this team has Stanley Cup aspirations, is it possible that this is actually going to be a good thing? And I realize that it's tough to quantify this, it's tough to qualify this when you're talking about expectations, but when you think of guys like Mark Scheifele and you think of guys like Kyle Connor and even some of the younger players like Vesalainen and Appleton, Niku, is this maybe going to be a good thing for the Jets? And they're going to say, okay, you have us as a, you know, a fourth or fifth place team in the Central, we're going to show you what we're all about.
Well, I think there's a lot to that as human beings, for sure. And I think that there's going to be a chip on the shoulder of a lot of people in that room, especially with the disappointing second half to last season and the first round playoff exit. I know in that same interview, Scheifele seemed to indicate that maybe it's a little easier to bear if you lose to the team that goes on to win it all. I still think back to September training camp last year. And maybe three out of four questions, I'm making this up, don't trust the analytics, but three out of four questions in my mind seem to come with the preface, okay, compared to last year, or are you going for the conference finals again? Can you beat that? And it's, you know, recency is basically what sets expectations, I think, in the NHL. And the fact that these guys are going to spend the entirety of the summer hearing about how disappointing it was, or feeling how disappointing it was, and then going into camp where the questions are probably going to be a little bit more touch and go than assuming a conference finals berth or something to that effect. I don't think that makes up for the loss of Jacob Trouba necessarily, or Tyler Myers or Ben Sherratt or Brandon Tanev, but there are other players in the organization. And I think that people being what they are and passionate athletes being what they are, it's at least going to be a motivator and something they can rally around.
Okay, Marat, so then I'm going to ask you to keep that prognostication hat on and say to us, which player is going to step up next season? Which young prospect, is going to step up and really seize a role on this Winnipeg Jets team?
I think Jack Roslovic is a good candidate for that. I think we're at the point where he's got a couple of years of professional under his belt, and it's often a time where you start to see steps forward for young players. He's often been on the fourth line, as we all know, and I think that we're at a position where he might be one of the leading candidates. If you were to run Kopp and Lowry necessarily together again, Roslovic or Mason Appleton would be a really good example of a player who could step up into that role and be a really responsible two-way winger. I'm very curious to see just how much of Christian Vesalainen's offensive chops translate to the NHL, assuming he does in fact make the team. If you're the sort that advocates for balanced lines throughout, he might have just enough offensive skill to get a little bit more than a fourth line role right off the hop, though I think that that's where he starts. On defense, that's where I'm the most curious. I don't know who to claim is going to take that step forward, but of Nikku, Pionk, Pullman, all down the line, Nathan Beaulieu was something to prove as well. And there's some fun highlights of him lighting it up in 3-on-3 summer league in Montreal.
Direct translation to NHL action, of course.
Yeah, I think all the analytics agree that 3-on-3 summer league is a good indicator. So somebody needs to in that case. And I think I'm most curious about seeing Sami Niku with increased minutes at the NHL level. Neil Pionk's going to get a long look for sure. These are the places where I think we can see steps forward. And what I'm looking forward to above all of that, I would like to see more than those short-term glimpses of Patrick Laine as a two-way dominant player that we got for a series of shifts against St. Louis or at certain moments throughout the year. I believe that he has room to grow yet, too, and just to be that a little bit more often. I don't expect dominance quite yet. I think it's too soon for that for him and his career. But I think he's got more to give as well.
Murat Attash covers the Winnipeg Jets for TheAthletic.com. You can read his great work there. Murat, thanks so much for joining us. Have a great rest of the summer. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks, you guys, as well. Thanks for having me.
Take care. When we come back, we talk about the Jets' salary cap situation. We discuss what they should do with Dmitry Kulikov as they're in the midst of the buyout window. Much more to come in your calls starting at the 10:15 hours. Lots of action coming on Twitter and text as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The Jets with around $17 million in cap space left, that should be enough to sign both these guys, even to long-term contracts. Patrick Laine coming in closer to 9, Kyle Connor closer to 7, which would leave them just underneath what they have available to themselves. So I don't think the Jets are in trouble here. I would be surprised if these two guys collectively made more than $17 million or $16.9 million.
That's Mike Johnson on NHL Network sort of breaking down the Jets' salary cap situation. When you really factor in the other players they need to add to
Appleton,
their roster, the 700,000 guys playing on their entry-level deal, it's closer to about $15.5 million, give or take, to sign Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine.
You can't just have 10 forwards on your roster.
It does not work well, usually, to have just 10 forwards. So, you know, add in Connor, add in a couple other $700,000 players, add in Connor and Laine, and you're looking at closer to $15.5 million as left for the Jets to sign those two players. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve and home of the Illegal Curve sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985 for a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long. Visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That's in the Cordon Village Mall. So with the $15.5 million left, give or take $100,000 here or there, is that going to be enough, Dave Minuk, to sign Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine? Or will the Jets have to make supplemental moves to get them under the salary cap?
Good question. I mean, again, based on what we're looking at, based on what Evolving Wild has projected, it may not. They may have to make a supplemental move. A lot of people are looking at Matty Perreault as a luxury the Jets can't afford based on his current usage. Again, if I'm Paul Maurice and I'm looking, I mean, there's been some, it's actually really interesting. I have to say, I enjoy reading Twitter and seeing a lot of the different line combos that people are using, especially with Sean Tierney's war model that they're able to kind of create these really
with.
Yeah, and it really is interesting what you can do and how you can.
I was playing with it last night with the line combination, and somebody else somewhere else was doing it at the same time.
Yeah.
So we kept flipping back and forth what each of us were trying to do. It was making it a little bit confusing, but it was fun to do nonetheless.
Right, and so it really depends on a player like Matthew Perreault. I mean, if you're going to minimize his usage, then is he a luxury? You can afford at $4.125 million for the next two seasons? Probably not. You know, Brian Little's contract, obviously, at 5.2, sorry. That's another one that, you know, that's a harder one because if I'm the GM and he's my guy that I signed to that six-year deal, then that's a problem because it's hard for me to accept that.
You have to trade out. You're admitting your mistake.
Correct. But at the same time, it's better to admit it.
Than compound it.
Than to compound it, right. So to your original question, Drew, I mean, really, it's a function of, I'm more inclined to believe that Patrick Laine is going to take a smaller number now on a bridge and really bet on himself to have that rebound year. And if you're the Jets, I think that's going to cost you a couple of years down the line because I think he's more likely, from what we saw in Patrick Laine in the playoffs and towards the last half of that season, I think we're more inclined, and especially based on his health, if everything's healthy coming into next season, I think we're much more likely to see a 40 to 50 goal Patrick Laine.
The Jets might be okay with that because the salary cap, you know,
is supposed to go up in 2 years.
The cap should go up. Right. They'll have a little more relief as some players get off their books. And as a result, maybe you're okay with Laine. You know, if Laine gets 40 or 50 goals, you'll pay him.
Right.
And that's a good problem to have because 40 or 50 goal scorers don't come around every day. That's
right. Right. And I echo what Dave said. I think there is the chance that the Jets move a player out. I definitely, and I said this, guys, back, I think it was May we first started talking about this. I didn't think that the Jets were going to buy Kulikov out, and that's quite simply because the Jets don't have enough depth on the left side. I mean, we talked about this with Marat, and we talked about this before he came on. Like, who is your second pair defenseman on the left side? Is it Sammy Niku? Is it Nathan Beaulieu? I mean, who is it, right?
And when, I think it's probably Beaulieu right now. I mean,
based on Maurice's history.
Yeah, I'm guessing that they're going to go with Beaulieu, probably with Byfuglien, see if he can just sort of step into the Ben Chiarot role.
And so if Sammy Niku's going to, let's say, just for argument's sake, he's going to stay on the right side. So is Dmitry Kulikov going to be your third pairing guy on the left side? Is it going to be Anthony Betetto? Like, I have Kulikov ahead of Betetto, but I think we'd agree that Kulikov and Betetto, those are your seventh defensemen, in a perfect world, right? I think we'd all agree with that. So,
well, let me ask you this question. So, I mean,
I just wanted to say one thing, Drew. You mentioned, you know, your question was, is 15.5 going to be enough? Mm-hmm. 15.5 million of remaining cap space. Yeah. Is that going to be enough, right? And I agree with Dave because I don't know what, maybe you have it there, Dave, but Evolving Wild, what do they have? If they have Laine A at 6 million for 2 years, I think that's around 6 to 7 is what they have him at, right?
I'd have to look it up exactly.
Yeah, I looked at it last week. I think it was 6 to 7 on a 2 year deal. Somewhere in that range, I mean, 6 million to 7 million. So if you're able to get, let's say, Laine A at 6.5, and then you're able to get Connor on a longer term deal, you know, between 7 and 8, I think then there's your 15.5 million. But we know, guys, that you still can go over the salary cap before the season starts.
Laine is they're projecting a $7 million 7 year contract for Laine. So they are actually thinking that he's not going to sign a bridge deal.
What's their percentage on that one?
The percentage on that one is, 24.4% or 26.8% that it's going to be 6 years or 7 years. So they don't think, I think that's a flaw in the formula.
Laine is not signing for 6 or 7.
No. I'd be shocked.
Especially not for that number.
Yeah, they think that, you know, there's only a 10% chance.
Laine
is. This is the Evolving Wild model that's been talked about ad nauseum all summer.
And it's great. Usually, they're very close. Their projections are excellent.
Pretty close. This one is, I think this one with Laine is a little off because I don't think anybody expects Laine to sign away a 7 years off of a down year.
If it's a bridge deal, he's not getting 9 mil a year. It's going to be closer to 6. I think we'd all agree. 5 or 6, right? So you're probably able to fit.
I think it's starting at least with a 6, maybe a 7.
Sure. I think probably closer to that.
And that's what I said earlier, right? Yeah. So whatever it is, you know, for the purpose of this argument, they probably can fit Laine and Connor into that 15.5 million, but they're going to be really close to it. Like, I don't see the Jets being, like, the most salary cap space I feel that they're going to have at the beginning of the season is maybe a million, maybe two. That's what I'm saying at the high end. I mean, it's close that they use almost all of it up.
And the question is, do they run 22 players as opposed to 23-man roster, which would give them a little bit of...
Yeah, I think they should. I mean, isn't that the one of the reasons you have your AHL team in the same building, albeit when they're both at home?
Yeah.
I mean, it gives you that flexibility to not run a full roster because, you know, you can just call a guy down from the hall and you get to save the accumulated salary cap savings.
I think it's a no-brainer. And I also think specifically if you're Paul Maurice, and based on, and of course we don't know, this is, again, we're speculating because we don't know what his opening night roster is going to be. Mm-hmm. But to me, the biggest mistake this organization tends to make is not allowing young players to play. So like when we saw Sammy Niku or we saw Tucker Pullman, like when they said Sammy Niku is not going to be, you know, Pascal Vincent, when we were talking to him, said Sammy Niku is not coming back to the AHL, he's an NHL player. Well, to me, it's like, okay, that's fine. But then Sammy Niku should be playing in the NHL, not watching. And if not, then you want him playing. And so to that point, I would have... If you're going to go, you need that space, and you have a guy like Niku. If you're not going to play him in the NHL, you put him in the AHL playing 25 minutes a game, top pairing minutes, and doing something. As
to your point, which you've been consistent about, he either plays in the NHL or he plays in the AHL because he's wasted playing sitting in the press box.
There's nothing worse than watching a young player. Look, I don't care if you're going to set a Betetto or you're going to set a Kulikov or you're going to set those guys in the press box.
Yeah.
That's fine because those guys they don't have that upward trajectory of their careers. But you cannot allow guys like Niku and Pullman and you know, guys who have relatively little NHL experience.
But high upside still to
just waste their time in the press.
Well, this is all, we're all going to talk about this and from 10:15 all the way through 11 o'clock, a lot more Jets talk. We're going to take your calls. I think a big question is, what six defensemen are the Jets starting six defensemen?
Right.
You know, is Kulikov destined for a role in the press box so that there is room for both Nyku and Poolman? Because if Kulikov, Beaulieu, and Morrissey are in your lineup and your right side is Byfuglien, Pionk, well, there's only one spot for either Nyku and Poolman, and that doesn't really work, to Dave's point about putting one of those high-quality younger, quote-unquote, younger players with, in terms of NHL experience, in the press box. They need to play either at the NHL level or the AHL
Pullman's
level.
Poolman's 25. I mean, I'm 37. So for me, Poolman's still young.
You go.
I mean, you know, like, he's not as young as Nyku, maybe, right? But, I mean,
everybody's younger than you, though.
Poolman is yeah, exactly. But Poolman is young in terms of NHL experience. I think that's what we're talking about. Don't get too fixated on, you know, 23 versus 25. We're talking about Poolman as a top D prospect in the Jets system. So that's what we're talking about. Not so much, you know, his age.
When we come back, Jeremy Rutherford's going to join us to talk about the St. Louis Blues offseason and then open phones starting at 10:15 this morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The Stanley Cup ended with the St. Louis Blues hoisting it. It's only fitting that the Blues also cap our interviews before we head off for our summer break. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From theathletic.com, he covers the Stanley Cup champion, St. Louis Blues. He's a good friend of the program. Jeremy Rutherford joins the show. Jeremy, good morning. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Hey, and I got to tell you guys, I don't know, it was at some point during the Stanley Cup playoffs, a couple writers were sitting around and we were talking about radio shows and which one you listen to and which one you like to join. And the number one show that popped up was this one. A lot of the writers said they like to talk to the Illegal Curve guys, so thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate those kind words, Jeremy. You know that you're number one in our books as well, so that's nice to hear, and we appreciate it.
And Jeremy, the check is in the mail, so you should get that about 3 or 4 days from now. So.
Hey, and I've heard you say that to two or three other writers about being number one. So.
We'll start sending checks as long as you don't cash them, because they're going to bounce really hard. Jeremy, obviously we brought you on to talk about the Blues offseason, and I want to start with probably one of the greatest stories in recent memory in the NHL. That's Jordan Binnington, of course, comes out of relatively nowhere. He leads the Blues or is a key contributor to the Blues to winning the Stanley Cup, and he signs a 2-year contract extension worth $4.4 million. You know, less so the number, but how difficult of a negotiation do you get the impression that this was when you have a player who basically comes, you know, from he's an unheralded player, comes out of nowhere, saves, quote unquote, the Blues season. How difficult is it to sort of come up with a number at that point in time?
Well, evidently it was not that difficult. Let me paint the scene here a little bit. So finally the Stanley Cup playoffs are over, the parade's over, the free agency's over, and I tell my wife, hey, we can finally go on vacation. So I'm in Florida, and news breaks of the Jordan Binnington contract, and I said, hey, it looks like I'm out on the beach today. You guys head down there. I got to make some phone calls. So I talked to Mike Liut, Jordan Binnington's agent, and I talked to Doug Armstrong, both of them that day. And they both said that it was pretty quick, probably a couple weeks. Now, you might think that when Jordan Binnington got hot and the Blues realized possibly what they had in him, maybe you fire up the negotiations then before he goes off and does what, wins a Stanley Cup or something crazy like that. But they waited. They waited until after the season. So the situation was this. The Blues weren't ready to commit long-term 6-7 years to Jordan Binnington, in part because he only played a half a season, but also because they're up against the cap, and that would have been a bigger number to bring him in starting next year. And secondly, he's 2 more years restricted free agent. So if you go beyond 2 years, you'd have to buy out some UFA years, touches on what I was saying a minute ago. So Jordan Binnington wanted a 2-year deal, and he and the Blues came to the number 4.4, which is just above what Jake Allen, coincidentally, is making it $4.35 million. So they get their guy for a couple more years. They get a little more context, a little more you know, sample size into what he can do. And meanwhile, Jordan Binnington gets his first big NHL paycheck.
You know, Jeremy, the Blues won the Stanley Cup about a month and a half ago, but we know that the city of St. Louis and the Blues players and friends and family are still partying. And a couple of days ago, you were in Southern Ontario, Seaforth, Ontario, Goderich, Ontario. You were following Ryan O'Reilly's Stanley Cup celebrations for TheAthletic.com. And I thought maybe one of the best pictures, not only of the day and the week, maybe of the entire year, was that picture of Granny O'Reilly, who's 99 years old. She's going to turn 100 years old pretty soon. What was that like to cover the parade and you know, Ryan O'Reilly, the Conn Smythe winner, and just see you know, how he was received in his hometowns?
It was great. You're right. That was the best moment of the day, and there were a lot of them. But to be in that firehouse there right down the street from Main Street in Seaforth, and to see Ryan O'Reilly come around the fire truck and walk the Stanley Cup over to his grandmother, who they call Granny O'Reilly, and she was a big-time field hockey player back in her day. 99 years old, she'll be 100 in November, and he basically put the Stanley Cup in her lap, and at first it looked like she was a little afraid to touch it, but she finally did, gave it a big kiss, and just moments after they had that exchange, I had an interview with Granny O'Reilly and asked her what that was like and just how proud of Ryan she was. And she said, listen, words in the dictionary cannot tell you how happy and excited I am for Ryan. She was a big influence. This isn't just a situation where she happens to be his grandma and they didn't see each other a lot. A big influence on his competitiveness and his drive. And so that was a really cool moment.
Now, Jeremy, Mark Savard was an analyst on television talking, and a former Bruins player, obviously. And it was funny looking back at his Twitter feed, talking about the Bruins and the Blues series, because now, of course, we know the Blues have hired him as a assistant coach. What went into his hiring, and what area is he really going to be focusing on with the Blues?
Yeah, before I touch on what he's going to do, kind of a quick exchange there, too. We had him on a conference call, and somebody asked him point blank, who were you rooting for in the Stanley Cup playoffs? And he took a moment. You know how people, when they're on the spot there, they kind of delay before they answer. And because he's really good friends with Craig Berube and had some conversations with Craig Berube throughout the second half of the year after he took over. So he said kind of pulling for both teams there, but the Blues need him. As you saw in the playoffs, the power play was absolutely atrocious. It was top 10 during the regular season, but just couldn't get out of its own way in the playoffs. I think they gave up four shorties in the four rounds, and that was obviously a league high in the playoffs. So they need to fix it. They've got the personnel. I mean, when you talk about O'Reilly and Tarasenko and Braden Schenn, you guys have seen it firsthand. They've got the personnel, but just not the execution. Mark Savard says that he can bring some options to the power play. Of course, he's got a great power play pedigree, 80 power play goals in his career, and also I think 292 of his 700 points in the NHL came on the power play, so he'll bring some ideas. And he can't get here fast enough in terms of trying to figure out that special teams unit.
Jeremy Rutherford is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jeremy covers the St. Louis Blues for TheAthletic.com. Jeremy, you had a great article about restricted free agency and arbitration, and you really focused on Brandon Manitoba's Joel Edmondson. He is arbitration eligible. He's got a hearing scheduled for the 4th of August. And one of the most fascinating quotes in that article, I thought, was a player being tremendously honest when he says, quote, I see everything on Twitter. I know what everyone is gossiping about, but honestly, there's nothing I can do about it now. And it goes on from there. I guess it's a two-part question. One, were you surprised to hear a player sort of admit so honestly that they hear everything that's going on online about them? And then two, how do you think that the situation with Edmondson and his arbitration hearing is going to play out?
Yeah, on the record, in terms of him saying that on the record, I was a little bit surprised. You know, you talk to players off the record at their locker stall, and, you know, they'll tell you that, yeah, I see that, and I read that guy's report the other day, and I saw this comment on Twitter. But when we're doing an interview with Joel Edmondson, so he knows we're talking on the record, and I said, so do you see some of this stuff? He says, yeah, I see everything on Twitter. And I was like, okay, well, so he's admitting. But they watch, they look, they know, we all know they do, and so he was honest there. And then in terms of his situation, it really is a difficult one, guys. I know you guys followed him throughout the year, him being an area guy, local guy. He signed the 1-year, $3 million deal last year, The Blues didn't have a lot of money, and so if he was looking for big money last year, get that AAV that he wanted, he wasn't going to get it. So he comes back, and it just wasn't a consistent year for him. It wasn't continuing that ride up that you would hope with a guy, you know, who's shown some really good things like he has in his career. A little bit of inconsistency. You know, he needs to be a physical guy. He was at times, but not all the time, and his numbers were a little bit down. His ice time was taken away, and he was a healthy scratch at times during the playoffs even. So I like Joel Edmondson. I'd like to have him on my team. I think if the Blues can work it out, they'll be better for it, but they need to find a number. And if he made $3 million last year, to me, he's asking for nothing less than four probably. I got to think the arbitrators would come in at 3.5. And I probably think the Blues are saying, hey, come back on another, you know, 1 year, $3 million deal. So that's probably where it lies right now, and we'll see if it gets to arbitration. Last year, they solved it the day before, imagine that, before they got to arbitration. So Joel, I know, was hopeful to get it resolved.
Jeremy, just a few more questions for you here. A couple weeks ago, Robbie Fabry signed a one-year deal for $900,000, and I think you would agree. I mean, that seems like an unbelievable bargain. Obviously, you know, he's missed, I think, around 80 games over the last couple years, if I'm not mistaken. But when you factor in, you know, Fabry's a guy that came into the NHL, you know, put up 18 goals in his rookie year, and this is a guy, former first-round pick, that has all types of offensive upside, is it really possible that if he plays a full season, this might be the biggest bargain in the entire league?
Yeah, I think it's a fair way to look at it, but he's going to have to play a lot better. He really is. And, you know, I realize that's not 100% on him. You know, it takes a lot of courage to do what he's done to come back from back-to-back ACL injuries. And then, guys, he comes back from that, and the rest of his body's overcompensating for the knee. And so then he had some back issues and some, I believe it was a hip issue. And so anyway, he finally gets going, finally gets some traction, and then he gets hit, delivers a hit, and he has a shoulder injury that keeps him out a little bit last year. So he's been banged up. But, you know, when he's been in the lineup and been healthy, he just hasn't been as effective as the Blues need him to be. So, you know, it's the big if here in St. Louis. You know, you said if he can be that type of player, that's a huge bargain. But we have to keep in mind that late in the regular season last year, in the playoffs, Robbie Fabry was an option, and the Blues did not go to him. They were going to Zach Sanford. They were going to Sammy Blais because they were delivering more. So I think that to expect Robbie Fabry to be that first-round pick and that guy who's going to score you 25, 30 goals and you're only paying him $900,000, I just don't know if that world's ever going to exist.
You know, Jeremy, only once in the last 20 years has a team gone back-to-back winning the Stanley Cup, and that was, of course, was the Penguins in 2016 and 2017. What are the Blues talking about so they can kind of get back into that conversation? Because it seems like a lot of people are kind of looking past the Blues already and already saying this was a one-off. This is a team that's not going to likely do that again. So what in the Blues' mind are they doing to try and buck the trend and get back to that Stanley Cup for next season?
Yeah, well, the one thing with the Blues, and trying to repeat here, is that this is 98-99% going to be the exact same lineup, exact same roster on night one in October as it was in the Stanley Cup final. They just had a situation with their contracts where everybody was basically coming back. You had a free agent, Carl Gunnarsson. You re-signed him. The only guy that possibly might not be back is Pat Maroon. He's a UFA. And, you know, he's got a couple one-year offers on the table, and if he doesn't like them, he might circle back with the Blues. So I guess the biggest question is Binnington the real deal? I know here in St. Louis a big question is the Blues played very, very well with their backs up against the wall last place from January on. How do you regain that type of edge? You know, it's going to be difficult. I mean, they're going to have to start from scratch and just kind of recreate that chemistry. You talk to hockey people, and they say that that's really hard to do. So, you know, I think they got a good team, a talented team, but a lot of stuff came together for them last year. You know, the coaching change, responding to Berube, Jordan Binnington bursting onto the scene. So a lot, I think, has to fall in place. But, you know, I do think they're a good team, and I do think they'll be among the contenders. And, you know, I don't see any reason to think that this is just sort of some one-off. It doesn't mean they're going to win the cup. It just means that I think, you know, this wasn't a fluke what the St. Louis Blues did.
Jeremy Rutherford covers the St. Louis Blues for TheAthletic.com. Jeremy, always appreciate your time. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll do it again real soon when the season commences.
Thanks, boys.
Take care, Jeremy. When we come back, it is open phones time, 204-780-1290. This is your opportunity. We don't do it often. Our Twitter question and our question of the day was the Winnipeg Jets will return to upper echelon status if X occurs. Tell us what X is. Who should be the Jets' second-line center? What are the Jets' ideal defensive pairings? Anything on your mind related to the Winnipeg Jets, 204-780-1290. Phone lines are open at Illegal Curve on Twitter, 1290-90 on text message. Standard messaging rates do apply. It's your opportunity. Get in on it now. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. Open phones from now to the top of the hour. Give us a call, 204-780-1290. We're talking Winnipeg Jets. We want you to join in on the conversation as well. Some of the topics, you might want to answer these questions. Our IC question of the day, the Winnipeg Jets will return to upper echelon status if X occurs. Who should be the Jets' second-line center? We talked about Andrew Kopp back in hour number one. We had a suggestion come in via text message. Blake Wheeler should move to center, somebody suggested. What are your thoughts on that idea? What are the Jets' ideal defensive pairings? You know, who should be up in the press box? It seems like the Jets have seven defensemen at an NHL caliber. Which one should be up in the press box? Which one should be in the lineup? We've heard a lot of people clamoring for a guy like Sammy Niku or Tucker Poolman to get a real opportunity. Does that come at the expense of a guy like Dmitry Kulikov? Should Kulikov be bought out in the current window of buyout opportunity? Lots to discuss. Give us a call, 204-780-1290. It's the Boston Pizza fan line, or also on Twitter at Illegal Curve via text message. Send your text to 1290. Let's head to the phone lines. I believe Mitch is on the line. Mitch, good morning and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Good morning, you merry bunch of menches.
That's the first time we've been called that, but I like it. Go ahead,
okay,
Mitch.
No worries. I don't want to be a nudnik. How's that?
That's good. As long as you don't use any Yiddish curse words, we'll be fine.
No, that's the extent of what I got.
Okay.
So I'm going to say my X factor is trading Nikolaj Ehlers.
Wow.
And if you guys remember from video game days, one of the hockey games you could play, you could either have skinny, fast guys or short, fat, bouncy guys.
Yeah.
I'm going to say the Jets have four of those type players right now. Niku, Roscoe, Connor, and Ehlers.
And you think that they need to get rid of the skinny, fast guy in Nikolaj Ehlers and replace him with somebody with more size, or just... You know, what kind of player would you be looking for in return for an Ehlers trade?
I would not necessarily trade, but the money value I would like to see getting from Toronto unrestricted defenseman there. Hang on,
Jake Gardner.
Thank you, Gardner.
Yeah,
I'd like to see Gardner. And it's not that I dislike Nick Ehlers' speed or anything like that. I'm going to say that he suffers from what I would call the Eric Lindros syndrome, in that what worked in junior, he thinks he can keep doing in the NHL.
You know, Mitch, you make an interesting point because, you know, and, you know, I don't know if you caught the program a few weeks back when we were talking about Ehlers and all those trade rumors, but, you know, I'm in the camp that believes Ehlers should remain a Jet just because I do think that he has untapped offensive upside and he's young and he's all that. But when you talk about possibly trading him to address a weakness, which we know, you know, the weakness is on defense right now, you go back, you know, what was it, 3 years, 4 years, when the Predators made that trade, Seth Jones for Ryan Johansson. Obviously, it's not, you know, the exact same type of situation, but that's how the Predators address their first-line center needs, right? So if you do want to bring in a bona fide top-four defenseman, a player like Ehlers is probably the one that you're going to have to move. Even though, as I mentioned, I'm not advocating to trade Ehlers, but I can see where you're coming from there.
Sorry, go ahead, Mitch.
No, please. After you.
No, I was going to say thank you for the call, but if you have anything else, we'll let you get in the last word on it.
All I was going to say is what the thing that I don't like about Ehlers' game is when he uses his speed and tries to go through five guys end to end, it usually doesn't work. I have seen a couple times where he will dump the puck in the corner and go get it and use his speed that way, and I would he would play his game more that way. How about that?
Mitch, I appreciate the call. Thanks for listening to the program.
No worries, guys. Keep up the great work. Thank you.
There's an open phone line now that Mitch has hung up, 204-780-1290. Give us a call on the Boston Pizza fan line. You can also do so on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, or via text message. Send your text to 129090. Let's go back to the phone lines. Rick is in downtown Winnipeg. Rick, welcome to the program. Good morning.
Hey, guys. You know, the weakness is not the defense. The weakness is we don't have a second line center. We don't have a disher. Andrew Kopp scored 15 assists last year. It's ludicrous, okay, to think that he's going to play second line center. He's got leadership qualities. He can skate, but he hasn't got a shot, and his passing skills are limited. Okay, you got Ehlers, Line A, and Connors. They're going to score 100 goals. So you need a disher. We don't have a disher. So somebody's going to have to go out and get a disher. That's my take.
Rick, appreciate the call. You're looking for a playmaker. And, I mean, I think there's probably something, you know, valid in Rick's point is that the Jets do not have one of those, you know, bona fide setup men playing up the middle. Scheifele is certainly a scorer. You know, he's certainly a passer too, but he's a scorer. And Brian Little has never been known as a dangling playmaker up the middle as in his role as second line center.
Right, and I don't think Rick is wrong, but you have to ask the question then: where is that second line center going to come from? Right. I mean, if the Jets had that second line center, they wouldn't have gone out and you know given up the first round pick to get Kevin Hayes a couple of years ago. They wouldn't have you know given up a first round pick to get Paul Stastny, right? So I don't disagree, but when you look at what the Jets currently have available in the system, I mean, your best option is Brian Little or Andrew Kopp, right?
Well, and what about Jack Roslovic? Well, he's never really had a full opportunity. Dave, yeah, you've watched Roslovic more than anybody in the city, given the time he spent with the Moose.
Yeah, but I mean, we've watched him too over the last 2 years. Roslovic, what has he done in the last 2 years that you would say, you know what, we're going to go with him as our second line center? And Drew, this is my point. Hold on. Okay. I'm not saying that Roslovic can't be an NHL second line center. I'm just saying going into next year, he's only 22 years old.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Roslovic has a lot of pro hockey ahead of him. But what I'm saying is if you're Paul Maurice, and we know that Paul Maurice preferred to use Roslovic as a winger, mm-hmm. I'm just saying, like, what did he do last year to make you think, okay, yeah, he's ready for that role? Because as we know, I mean, second line center, it's not just about being able to dish the puck. I know what Rick is saying. I mean, you need a setup guy there for whether it's Nikolai Ehlers, Lion A, Connor, whoever it is. But all I'm saying is right now, unless the Jets swing a trade, and we know it's not coming via free agency because there aren't, second line centers out there.
They don't have money for it.
That's what I'm saying. So, I mean,
You have to try something internally. Why don't you try a guy that you drafted as a center?
I think you would use Andrew Kopp before you would use Roslovic this year. I'm not talking about 2 years from now. I'm talking about right now. I just don't know if you can say Roslovic is ready to be a second-line center in the league.
I would say Roslovic is an elite passer, probably one of the best passers on the team, based on the way he played in the AHL. I think that that's one of his best abilities. Less of a goal scorer. I mean, his hat trick last year was the first pro hat trick he had had.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually
think it was
more
of an anomaly than something to expect.
And he only scored 6 more goals the whole year, right? So, again, I'm not knocking on Roslovic, Dave, because you know that I'm a big fan of his game.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm saying is I think it's too premature to just say, oh, yeah, you know what? The Jets can just put Roslovic in there. I mean,
I give him the opportunity is my point. You've never really given him the opportunity, Dave.
Yeah, but do you do that early in the season?
You do things early in the season. You don't wait until it doesn't work in March to try and do it. You do it in October and November, and you try and experiment, and you experiment in the preseason, although it doesn't, of course, mean as much. But you do it early in the season so you can learn and develop these guys, Dave. Sorry.
Yeah. I agree. And like I said, I think Roslovic is a phenomenal player. Will he slot in? I mean, we've been talking now, it seems like a while, that he would be the successor to Brian Little and when that torch was going to be passed and when that would happen. So, I mean, do I think that Jack Roslovic would more likely be a second-line center than Andrew Kopp? Yes. Do I think that in terms of offensive ability, do I think in terms of defensive ability that Paul Maurice is going to put him in that position? Probably not.
Well, you know what? It's an interesting debate. We've had the debate, you're right, multiple times here on the program. It is, I think, time to maybe see what you have there with Roslovic is my point. And, you know, Paul Maurice has been more inclined to use him on the wing. I'll tell you what, let's go to break. We got callers who are lined up. Neil, you're next, then Matt, then Bob. Stay with us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Phone lines are open. You're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
25 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're taking your calls, 204-780-1290. Get in right now before our summer break begins promptly at 11 in the morning. We'll be back, of course, Labor Day weekend.
And we won't speak to each other for the entire month.
God willing. I guess we'll have to wish you congratulations whenever your next edition arrives on the scene. But after that, yeah, I don't expect any response to that text message is what I'm telling you. Welcome back. This segment of the show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town. Straight from Los Angeles, Dave Williamson has two shows, 7:15, 10 p.m. Get your tickets now. My understanding is they are going quickly and there's not that many left. So get them now before it is too late.
And Drew, quickly, a good shout out to our boy Kevin Bozeman, who we've had on the show multiple times.
Yeah.
He's going to be at Rumors in, I think, 2 weeks.
Exactly. Yeah. He will be there in a couple weeks.
Are we going to take him bowling? Or?
Well, we did take him bowling last time, so maybe we'll have to.
We also took him to McDonald's. Remember that?
I do.
Yeah. Yeah. August 6th through 10th, Kevin Bozeman is going to be at Rumors. Another Illegal Curve bowling outing maybe on the horizon. Let's head back to the phone line. Neil is in Tuxedo. Neil, good morning and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Good morning, boys. I've been on hold for half an hour right now.
Well, clearly you have nothing better to do with your time.
The phone lines are jammed. So my question is about the Jets' blue line depth and notably on the farm and specifically about Logan Stanley. Getting a little nervous about, is he going to be a bust? I know at one point in time, Morrissey, there was questions, is he going to make the team a couple years ago? And now he's obviously the number one. So wanted to get your take. More importantly, maybe Dave has some insight about Logan Stanley.
The Moose insider, Dave Minuk, you've watched Logan Stanley last year, you know, for almost 82 games when you factor in the away games as well. What are your thoughts on Logan Stanley's development?
I would say he developed quite a bit last year in his first year pro. I think that Coach Pascal Vincent relied upon him significantly. I mean, especially when the Jets had injuries on the blue line, they called up a lot of the guys. And Logan Stanley, I think when the Moose were in California, I think he was playing between 25 and 30 minutes a game. So in terms of being a bust, it really depends on what your objective or your perspective is as to what he's going to be. Is he going to be a first-pairing defenseman? Not in my estimation. Is he a second-pairing defenseman? Maybe that's his ceiling. I mean, I think he fits probably more into a third-pairing role. I mean, he's a big guy. He's not the most aggressive guy. He can hold his crease, but, you know, I mean, he's still learning. I mean, to me, and I'm more of a long-term guy with defensemen, so I like when they have an opportunity to develop in the AHL more than rushing them into the NHL. So I would, you know, tend to think that I would leave Logan Stanley in the AHL for the majority of this season, maybe give him a game or two with the Jets if, you know, towards the end of the year. But, I mean, is he a bust? I mean, really, it depends on what you thought he was going to be.
He's 21 years old. Like, yeah. I mean, you can't call a 21-year-old defenseman. You just mentioned it, Dave. Defensemen take longer to develop.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. I mean, and you've watched him more than I have, but everybody expects him to play the majority of the season with the Moose. Logan Stanley's at least a year away, if not two.
Yeah, no, and again, like I said, I think he's just one of these players. He's very polarizing, right? Because the Jets obviously moved up to grab him, and a lot of people now look at other players and say, well, we could have had him, So I think there's a lot of pressure in that regard. But I think from my perspective, it's too early to call a player a bust. I don't like writing off players before they've really even begun their careers. So, I mean, can I future cast and say Logan Stanley is going to have a 10 to 15 year NHL career being a top pairing guy? No, but at the same time, I wouldn't be prepared to call him a bust. I think that's way too aggressive a term. I think he played very well in the AHL. I think, does he have things to learn still? Yeah, of course, because he's a first-year pro. But I think at the same time, it would be way too early to call the guy a bust.
Neil, appreciate the call. Thanks for hanging in and staying on hold with us. Let's go to Matt. He's in St. Vitale. He wants to talk about the second-line center. Matt, good morning. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Our pleasure.
Big fan of the show.
Thank you, Matt.
So for the second line center, I think we already have it in-house, Ryan Little. I think the secret is surrounding him with Blake Wheeler. He's played his best hockey when he's been playing with Blake. You play him with, you know, Ehlers, and you have Connor and Laine up front. I think Laine and Scheifele, that'll help to develop Laine, get the best out of him. Alternatively, you put Jack Roslovic on the second line with Blake Wheeler and Kyle Connor, and that solves all of our issues. We don't have to trade our first-round picks anymore. We've got a bona fide second-line center, basically thanks to Blake Wheeler.
Matt, appreciate the call. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Ezzy, you wanted to jump in on how many
times have I said that? I mean, you know, we've talked about this not only this week, but we've talked about it last week with Sean Tierney of The Athletic, you know, the idea of breaking up Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. And the most logical guy to play with Blake Wheeler on that second line is Brian Little. And I agree. And we talked about this more last week, but, you know, the idea of Patrick Laine playing on that top line, and then you maybe have, you know, Connor, Little, Wheeler, or, you know, Matt mentioned, you know, maybe you go Roslovic, Connor, and Brian Little. But I think, guys, you know, just to, you know, think that, you know, a second line center is going to come out of thin air. I mean, we talked about it. Your options are Brian Little, Andrew Kopp, or Jack Roslovic. And I just think, you know, when you look at those three options, and, you know, I don't want to, you know, beat a dead horse here, Drew. Mm-hmm. I just think that, you know, Jack Roslovic is a little ways away from being the Jets' everyday second line center. We might see it as early as, you know, the beginning of the season. We might see it, you know, later in the season. But I just think, you know, in this particular case, I realize Jets fans, you know, they kind of look at that second line center and they say, oh, we're just going to go with Brian Little again. Well, last time I checked, Brian Little was a really good hockey player. I'm not saying he's the best second line center in the league.
I think Jets fans are concerned that they're going to go with Brian Little, Patrick Laine, and Nikolai Ehlers again.
Well, and I can understand that, but that's why maybe, you know, you take Wheeler off that top line, and that's what I think Matt's getting at here. Mm-hmm. You take Wheeler off the top line. He's one of your best offensive players. You know, he's a possession driver, so you put him with Brian Little, and then you maybe put another possession driver like a Nikolai Ehlers or a Kyle Connor. And then if your second line is Connor, Little, and Wheeler, or Roslovic, you know, Little and Wheeler,
whatever it might be,
it's going to be a really good second line.
Well, it's an interesting idea, is, you know, surrounding Brian Little with a guy like Blake Wheeler, where he's had years worth of success and comfort, and see what the results you get there. Let's go back to the phone lines. 204-780-1290. The Boston Pizza fan line is open. Get in on the conversation before 11 in the morning. Bob, you're in North Winnipeg. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Good, Bob.
Yeah, I was going to comment on the second line center as well. I might also give you a slight insight to how I feel about Logan Stanley. One of the things is that the two best, I think, passers or facilitators that they have are probably either Ehlers and Wheeler. And the problem being is that I think that if you want to play Laine and Ehlers together, you have to move them up to play with Scheifele. I kind of actually like leaving Connor there and moving maybe little Laine and Wheeler, or Vesalainen on the right side with Wheeler and Laine. That, to me, would be the way to go, but they do need a distributor. The interesting fact is that if anybody remembers Jack Roslovic, when he was playing in the World Juniors, his left winger was Austin Matthews. He was the center.
Yep.
So there's no question that amongst his peers, during time of development, I mean, he has the capability of being a good center. And as far as Logan Stanley goes, he missed a year and a half through injury after he was drafted. So that has slowed his development. I just wanted to make that comment.
Yep.
And the question I have for you guys, were you trying to say that we should bridge Laine at $6.5 million per year?
Well, we're not going to do anything because we don't have $6.5 million.
I think, Bob, what we were saying. Sorry, go ahead.
Do you think the Jets should bridge him at $6.5 million a year?
I don't think we were advocating for that. I think we were saying that there's a good chance that that happens based on, you know, where the negotiations are, what the intelligence we've received. I think that's what we're expecting. I don't know if it'll be exactly $6.5 million, but
I wouldn't think the number would go anywhere near that high. I would expect it to be around Trouba money, maybe a little bit more because it's advanced 2 years. I would say 2 years, it may be somewhere between $8.5 and $9 million, because there's no benefit. They might as well just say, here's 6 years. We'll give you $50 million for 6 years, because you want to buy those three free agent years anyhow. If you're going to give him already $6.5 million per year for the 2 years, there's no benefit going into the RFA years.
Bob,
they're gone.
Bob, appreciate the call. Thank you very much for joining us.
No problem, buddy.
Take care. That's Bob calling from North Winnipeg. I mean, I think his numbers, his expectation on Lion A's numbers there, I think are a little lower than it's going to probably come in at.
I don't think Lion A gets 2 years, $9 million a year. And the reality is...
I think he was saying 2 years, $4.5 million a year.
Oh, okay.
For that, 2 years, $9 right. million total. Right. And unless I misunderstood Bob, which is... You know,
get Bob
possible.
Back on the line. I'm...
Well, and it's tough to say, right? Because, I mean, Lion A is coming off of a down year, right? We've talked about his shooting percentage and all that, guys. So I just, the point I was trying to make, you know, a few segments ago was if Lion A does sign a bridge deal, I would expect it to be less than he would sign on a long-term deal.
Course.
So instead of it being 8 or 9, it would be 6 or 7. But again, this is all speculation here.
We'll find out over the next month or 6 weeks or give or take whenever Kyle Connor and Patrick Lion A sign. Corey's in River Heights. Todd is in St. Boniface. Guys, hang on the line. When we come back, our final commercials, final segment for the summer. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. As we mentioned, we're going to take a few weeks off. We'll be back Saturday, August 31st. Mark it down in your calendar if you're looking for us. We'll be back on August 31st. But of course, the website, illegalcurve.com, and our Twitter feed, at Illegal Curve, those will still continue to be updated over the next 4 or so weeks. Let's head back to the phone line. Corey is in River Heights. Corey, good morning. Thanks for hanging in with us. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Corey? Nope. Looks like maybe Corey didn't hang in with us, so I will repeal my thanks to you, Corey. You feel shame for not hanging in with us.
We left Corey on hold for too long.
There's a lot of callers. I can only do so
Drew,
much.
It's Saturday. People have things to do here.
Well, clearly they do. Let's go try Todd in St. Boniface. Todd, good morning. Are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Nice to... Good morning, Todd. How are you?
That a boy, Todd.
Good. Yourself?
Very well, thank you. What's on your mind?
Good. Well, I just feel the Jets lost, Sherratt and Trouba and, just to name a few. I don't know. You know, I know we have defensemen in the minors and they have made a few trades. I don't know if it'll be... I hope we can make the playoffs. Let's put it that way. We won't have the same... I don't think we'll have the same... outcome as we did last year, even the year before.
Todd, appreciate the call. Thanks so much for that. I mean, Todd's point is valid. Certainly the Jets are on paper not as strong entering the 2019-20 season as they were entering the 2018-19 season. So it is a big question mark. How do the Jets develop some of their younger players? How do they respond to maybe being, not considered in the upper echelon of the NHL anymore because of what happened this past year? I mean, it's a valid point. It's going to be a fascinating... I think the start to the season for the Jets is especially fascinating.
Yeah, and they don't have an easy schedule to start, right? We've talked about the road games. I think they have 11 and 15 in November, if I'm not mistaken, road games.
Sounds similar right? to that, yeah.
So when you're talking about, the first 30 games, you're going to have a lot of games on the road. And, each team is going to have their challenges with the schedule. It definitely doesn't look as daunting as it was, last year or the year before. But, I think we'd all agree that losing Jacob Trouba is a big hit. And all due respect to Neil Pionk, he's just not Jacob Trouba. But, when you're talking about, a step back, I mean, we talked with Murad about this. I mean, I still think the Jets are a playoff team. I really don't think the Jets missed the playoffs this year. I mean, I can hear an argument that the Jets are maybe, the third or fourth best team. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that, they're sixth or seventh in the Central. I still think the Jets, have, with all of the offensive talent that they have and, the goaltending strength and all of that, I still think the Jets will be a playoff team. But I'll put it this way, Drew. I don't think the Jets are going to be a 110-point team. I mean, I think the Jets are going to be somewhere around... I'd say 94 to 100 points. That's kind of where I would say the Jets are. And if you think about it last year, the last 3 months of the season, the Jets were a 500 team. So I would make the counter argument that, the Jets underachieved big time during the regular season. Obviously the playoffs, they underachieved. But when you're talking about, some of the steps they took back last year, I still think there's room to grow for players that are still, I'm not talking about, the Tucker Pullmans and the Veselainens and the Appletons. I'm talking more so the Nikolai Ehlers, the Jack Roslovics. I still think that those guys mm-hmm. have room to grow.
So the guys who've played, 100-plus games at the NHL level.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I think it's... it would be very foolish to think that the Jets are to say that the Jets are going to be a non-playoff team. Yes, have they taken a step back? Are they up there, with Tampa Bay, Toronto, Boston, St. Louis, the kind of upper echelon teams? Are they still there? I could listen to that argument that maybe they're not part of that elite pack anymore, but to say that the Jets aren't going to be a playoff team with certainty, mm-hmm, I think would be a little bit foolish. Again, they're in a strong division, so they could always miss the playoffs. But when you're talking about, the high-end, big boys like Scheifele, Wheeler, Laine, Connor, Morrissey, Hellebuck, I mean, this team is still a very good team, in my opinion.
Dave, of the seven defensemen, I sort of wanted to talk about this today, but we didn't get an opportunity. That's okay. Of the seven Jets defensemen, mm-hmm, which one is in the press box at the start of the season, and which are the six that are going to be playing on the Jets' blue line? Is there room for Nikku and Pullman? People want to see Nikku and Pullman in the lineup. They know what they have in Dmitry Kulikov, and they'd rather him be up in the press box, and they want to see what Nikku and Pullman can do with extended minutes and an extended opportunity.
Well, I mean, again, we've seen Nikku and Pullman step up in the AHL, and both are very capable defensemen. Whether they're given that opportunity, I mean, I think a lot of it may be based on their training camps. I mean, you have to come in and really force the coach to not put you in. And so, we can't just place guys in. We don't know what's going on with them in the summer. We don't know how they're training, what they're going to come into camp like. So it's very difficult to say, well, this person for sure will be based on last year, right? We've got to look at what's going to happen now. So we'll see how these guys come into training camp. But my expectation if you ask me, I would say you would want to have Nikku and Pullman both in. I think they're both capable. They're both sufficiently, trial by fire in professional hockey that they can handle the rigors of the NHL. Again, it'll take some adaptation, no question about it.
There'll be some growing pains.
Of course. But the point is, that's why you pair them with guys like Dustin Byfuglien or Josh Morrissey. You give them guys who have veteran experience, who are fully capable of, giving them that assist so that they're able to get their games to the next level. So would I expect one of those guys to be in the press box based on the history of Paul Maurice's coaching, then greater likelihood. Yeah.
Whether or not that's the right answer or not is obviously up for debate, but based on his preference for veterans, you would tend to think he would continue to rely on that. That's it for this Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. As we mentioned, we'll be back Saturday, August 31st. We hope everybody has a great summer. We're going to spend some quality time with our family.
Shout out to my sister getting married tomorrow.
Your sister's getting married tomorrow. Exactly. Shout out to your sister.
Don't do it, Rachel.
Big thank you to our guests on today's program, Murat Ateş of The Athletic and Jeremy Rutherford of The Athletic. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca. It's on illegalcurve.com. It's wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, rate, review us, let us know what you think. Big thank you to our sponsors. They make Illegal Curve Hockey possible. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Big thanks to producer Sean Asor, for Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Until Saturday, August 31st, thanks for listening to TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.